Hey guys, it's Albert. Thank you for being patient with us. We had all kinds of technical issues this week. I'll explain those in a minute. We're going to kick things off here on a Friday by explaining the primary similarity between the Rams and the Patriots and how that similarity explains the 2018 NFL season. Then Jenny and Connor come in to break down the news. And as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter question. Let's go. All right, welcome back in. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. I'd say take two, take three. We've had all kinds of technical issues this week because I'm in charge of producing the podcast, and that is problematic when we're so far away from home. We finally have it fixed, I think. If you're listening to this, we have it fixed. I'm going to leave things off here just explaining what I think are the commonalities between the two teams that are playing here and that are going to meet in the Super Bowl in Atlanta on Sunday. And the main thing I think that sort of becomes the theme for the 2018 season that ties these two teams together, it's open-mindedness. It's an ability to switch what you are on a week-to-week basis, almost on a day-to-day basis. It's flexibility. And I think we've seen that from both of these teams. And I go all the way back to, you know, being in Chicago at the beginning of training camp. They opened camp before anybody else. And some of the ideas that Matt Nagy was bringing to the table. And I remember Ryan Pace telling me when he was watching college players, Matt would have two legal pads there. One where he's taking down notes on the players. The other where he's stealing plays. And fast forward to the season, I remember talking to Sean Payton about how he'd steal plays from Sean McVay. Went back to Sean McVay. He said, yeah, I do the same thing in taking from Sean Payton. And both those guys said New England was on their watch list of teams that they watch every Monday morning. And so you see an open-mindedness, you see almost humility in what they're doing, and I think we've seen it across the NFL in 2018 everywhere. It's all over the place in the NFL. And it's just, I think we're going to see it on Sunday too, and that both teams, and I'll bring Connor and Jenny in, and my apologies again for all the back and forth and recording the podcast this week. And I'm sorry to everybody out there, all right, that we didn't get this out until Friday morning. But I think that there's an open-mindedness in both of these teams. And I think it's something to be excited about on Sunday because I think that there's a chance that these two teams bring something to the table we haven't seen yet. And I think there's a good chance that Belichick throws something at McVay that McVay hasn't seen yet. And McVay throws something at Belichick that Belichick hasn't seen yet. And that's what's so cool about this. And I think that's what makes it emblematic of this season in general. So much of the season was about offensive ingenuity. And that's, you know, the offensive explosion early in the year, passing yards through the roof, everything else. But I think as much as anything else, it's about being open-minded and about new ideas. And both of these teams, I think, are at the forefront now. The Rams are there now with McVay as their coach. And the Patriots, I think, have been there for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, this is kind of one of the intriguing matchups. I mean, I think any of the four remaining teams in the championship rounds, I think, would have made for a similar thing. You know, like you mentioned at the top, these are the four teams that, you know, stand out among the most, you know, willing to sample from other places. I think what we'll also be interesting to see is, you know, Belichick's a defensive-minded head coach. So what does he have for the Super Bowl? What innovation, you know, or, you know, approach will he have for the Rams offense? Will he do anything different? Yeah. Is there time to do anything different?
Yeah, you'll hear a lot about unscattered looks on Sunday, I think.
Yeah, just to set the stage for everybody, Jenny and I are sharing a microphone, which makes us sort of like the Supremes.
This is not the ideal.
Albert, I guess, is Diana Ross in this scenario.
So just to explain to everybody like what's going on here, we have this like new contraption that, I mean, shout out to Jess, I can't, Smetana? How do you spell it?
Smetana. And shout out to Gary Gramling for solving it.
Right. So shout out to Jess and Charlotte Wilder for lending us the equipment. Which we couldn't figure out how, or I couldn't figure out how to work the first time around. I think we have it right. As long as you're listening to this, we did finally get it right.
Yeah.
And we are in my hotel room right now, and you probably hear an echo. And I think at one point I was just to, again, further set the scene, Jenny was looking at her cell phone, and I was, like, giving her hand signals and everything else to put it down, so there are all kinds of technical issues with this week's episode.
Connor and I are huddled together on the couch sharing a mic, uncomfortably close.
Yeah. So I don't want to see any funny business over there, guys. Let's jump right into the news. And you know what? Because last week went so good, and we went through this on the original podcast, we're going to let Connor take the lead role because he did such a great job putting together the news topics last week. I was nowhere near as poetic as Connor has been over the course of the last last week. Connor was more poetic. God, we're all messed up now. Connor was more poetic last week than I had been over the course of the previous 18 weeks. So, Connor, stage is yours. News topic number one.
This feels good. Despite being a young team, the Rams aren't afraid of angering the Patriots this week. Sean McVay kept the team pretty loose, as evidenced first by a pretty blunt assessment of New England's roster from Nickell Robey-Coleman. But, you know, several other players don't really seem interested in kissing the ring. We've seen a few examples of that earlier this week. By the time this airs, we'll have a story on our website. Ndamukong Suh said today that I'm not afraid to poke the bear in reference to Tom Brady, and added that I don't think Tom Brady's a bear anyway. And so, you know,
not a bear lever.
So I don't believe that's like taking it next level, though, right? Because not only am I not poking the bear doesn't exist.
The problem with how this is set up, like you can imagine these poor players sitting at like a table. Like a convention, and there's just 1,000 people screaming at them, and so
especially the Rams setup.
Yeah, so really, you know, what I wanted to know is what animal was he then? If you're not a bear
or a goat,
maybe that's where he was going with it. But I think
or a dog.
Oh, underdog.
Nice. The underdogs, they'll tell you.
But the undercurrent that this whole week has been that they're sort of tired of hearing about the Patriots' mystique, which you see with every team that plays the Patriots in the Super Bowl. By Wednesday or Thursday, they're so tired of hearing about how they do everything the right way and how they're always here. And I think that in a weird way, I think that sort of plays into it and sort of helps them out a little bit.
Yeah, and I actually didn't like Nickell Robey-Coleman walking the comments back. Like, he made the comment to Ty Dunn from Bleacher Report. I think he said, and God, I don't want to mess this up, but he said Brady is, you can see his age, whatever. It was something along those lines. I don't like him walking it back. Like, if you're going to make those comments, dude, I would much rather have seen him double down on it. You know, and I understand that somebody probably got to him or whatever. But, I mean, and now we can't play this game that we played the original time.
I was
time.
Just going to say, you had a trivia question.
Yeah, the trivia question, which I asked when we first recorded this podcast, which was, and you guys can answer it now because you guys know the answer, the last time there was a very high-profile defensive back to say something about Brady and get away with it was...
And let the record show, I did get this correct the first time.
It took a little bit,
took a little while, maybe 30 seconds, but I think that's pretty good. Antonio Cromartie...
That's right. Called him an a-hole.
Called him an a-hole the week of the divisional round, the 2010 Jets season that we like to reference so often on this podcast.
Right. What a time in our lives, right?
The 2010 Jets... Like the 2010 Jets will go down in history, like the pre-Tebow year, right? Like, because... You could extend it into 2011 too, right? Because there was, you know, Sal Powell at training camp every day with the Wayfarers on in front of the camera, and they had the Tebow play by play, right?
Tebow was 2012. You're skipping ahead a little bit.
Was it 2012?
Yep.
You missed the 2011 was the Plaxico Burress Derek Mason meltdown year.
So the bottom line is like, but I did think about this. I did think about this a little bit. I think that what the Jets had was fearlessness, right? I think the Jets would make comments like that, and they wouldn't back off of them. I think the Ravens have had that with the Patriots, like this fearlessness. They're not afraid to talk. They're not afraid to say anything. And that's why I'd almost rather see like somebody like Robey-Coleman like double down on, like you know what? You said it. Own it. Like, what's it going to do? Make Brady play better? Like, I just think it almost to me like reflects weakness. Like, if you're going to say something, then take it back.
I think that
and you can acknowledge like I shouldn't have said that, but like it was just instead of like trying like I took it I was taken out of context. I didn't really say like some BS, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting about it all this is like where do you want to be personally when this game is over? I mean, you know, if you win, how much better is it going to feel saying that I won this game, being who I am, and talking and not being afraid of anybody? And if you lose, you know, how do you feel personally if you lose and you spent the whole week complimenting your opponents and saying, well, I'm sorry about, you know, being mean to everybody. Yeah. I think that there's an element of, you know, this is sort of the last game. This is like the final duel. And I think that there should be an appropriate amount of swagger to it.
No question. Okay. News topic number two. Again, these are not my words. These are Connor's words.
Again, because speaking of walking it back.
Yeah, because he was so poetic last week. We're giving him a second shot at this. And he is our copywriter for this. News topic number two. Oddly enough, the Patriots seem to be leaving us feeling more sure about the future of their dynasty than in years past, despite Rob Gronkowski's future being up in the air. Stalwarts such as Tom Brady, offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels, and offensive line guru Dante Scarnecchia have already confirmed that they are coming back for 2019. Let the record show that Connor Orr put the phonetic spelling there. Scarnecchia. I agree with what Connor wrote here. I do think that this is a different... It's a different situation that they had last than they had last year. Last year, it sort of felt like, and I think my buddy Tom Curran put it this way: it felt like everybody was like reaching for their coats to leave the bar. Like that's what it felt like. And this does not feel like this. Like this feels like a team that's very like to be more together than last year's Patriots were. I think we know Brady's going to be back. We know Belichick's going to be back. We know McDaniels is going to be back. Like you wrote here, Connor, and so. I don't know how good they're going to be next year. I think we're obviously way into uncharted territory as far as Brady and Belichick having this much success this deep into their careers. But yeah, there's definitely a different feel around that team than there was.
Last year just felt like it could just splinter apart at any moment, right? Yeah. And this year it really does feel like they are, you know, they're getting along. There's good vibes. I just think it's a 180 degree difference in terms of the feeling around the team.
No question.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, it was funeral-esque last year, I think, after the Eagles game. You remember Matt Patricia going around and hugging everybody and saying goodbye, and at that point, you know, we thought that Josh McDaniels was leaving. And, you know, Belichick always does a good job of replenishing the staff, and I think that we kind of get to a point where we think, oh, he's not going to be able to do it again. But I think especially those people who were leaving, like Matt Patricia was believed to have had a very serious effect on, you know, their evolution as a defense, and certainly you could say the same thing about Josh McDaniels. But now it's like, you know, there's nothing different, you know, about this team. It's like, okay, we're all coming back next year, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Jenny, news topic number three.
The health and usage of Todd Gurley remains a big mystery heading into Sunday's matchup. While many expect it to be a split backfield between Gurley and CJ Anderson, a fully healthy Gurley could be a harbinger for an offensive explosion, reminiscent of their early season exploits. So Connor just dropping some more vocab bombs in there, just like last week. I've been doing the Patriots pool reports and have missed Rams availability this week, so I'm going to have you guys come in.
Yeah, now, Connor, you were around Gurley today, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, and I'll defer, I think, a little bit to the people who cover him on an everyday basis, but it just seems like, you know, Sean McVay went through an awful lot of effort to pump him up during his press conference and to say that his performance in the Saints game was McVay's fault. It had nothing to do with Gurley. But I don't know. I don't know if anybody else agrees with this, but just like there seems to be this feeling that like, A, you know, it could just be that he doesn't want to do this, right, and talk to people all day, which I certainly don't blame him. I feel the same way. But maybe that he just doesn't – something doesn't seem right to me. Like something just seems just a tad bit off.
I think it was interesting that McVay was very aggressive on his first availability, like the first non-media night availability on Tuesday. He was very aggressive about saying he's going to be a big part of this game plan. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe that's something to build your player up. You know what I mean? Like that's an effort to say, like, he's still a huge part of what we do. I my understanding is that there was no sort of injury setback or whatever that caused him to sit. And what one of the coaches told me was that he, like they did use him, like they just decided to reel him back. Like we're going to use him situationally. We're going to use him in no huddle. We're going to use him in 2 minute. And he handled that pretty well. If there is a confidence issue, like and maybe that part is like a lingering injury, then it's something certainly worth watching. And I wonder if maybe then in the first five minutes of the game they do something to try to get him going. You know, whether it's throwing him the ball out of the backfield, you know, calling something that maybe they haven't called to try to get him in the open field. Maybe they do something early on to, A, build up his confidence, and B, test where he's at physically.
I mean, we all saw that Saints game, and, you know, I think what's fascinating to me is what if that happens again? Like, that's always the risk you run as a coach, trying to ease a player into a game, whether it's a quarterback or a running back. You want the short throw if it's a quarterback at the beginning of the game. Well, what if he misses that short throw?
Right.
You want the running back to catch that short pass with a little bit of room to run. But what if the same thing that happened in the Saints game happens again, where you drop that pass? And, you know, I think that there's a legitimate argument to be made there, that there was a little, you know, he was affected by that. You know, he didn't run the same way that he normally runs. I think that he dropped another pass later on in the game that was somewhat consequential as well. But, you know, I think that there isn't a more important player that we sort of have questions about going into the game than Todd Gurley.
No, all set, Jenny?
Listen,
said it so well.
You know,
right?
This mic situation, we're managing it.
We're
this
managing
mic situation,
it.
But Jenny actually just turned down the mic.
Well, no, you know, it's like when Jared Goff's headset went out in the game. You just have to do what you can.
Just improvise.
Improvise, yeah.
All right, Connor, news item number 4.
All right.
All right, I can flip the computer around too. This is a real professional operation here in my hotel room.
A pair of coaches, Patriots linebackers coach Brian Flores, Rams quarterbacks coach Zach Taylor, are preparing for new gigs this week. While they claim their mind is on the present, is it difficult to maintain the task at hand in the near future? One thing I will say that was interesting today is that Brian Flores stopped during his media availability and looked at the two Dolphins reporters who had been sitting next to him every day for the entirety of the media availability, and he just said, are you guys tired of just sitting here? Like, you know, I'm not going to say anything. And but it's strange, right? I mean, it's like, you know.
It was the same thing last year, though.
Yeah.
Like, you guys remember that? Like, the Indy reporters were following Josh around, and the Detroit reporters were following Patricia around.
The whole playoffs, I remember they were, you know, Patricia was on the field playing with his kids after, and I remember seeing the Detroit reporters kind of like on the edge
the
there, just kind of waiting, you know, catching what they can. But I think the first time we did the pod, we made the point, I think it's still true, is that it's a little bit more like, you know, it almost feels like a little bit more wink and nod this year, like we know what's happening. Whereas last year, I don't know, it felt like they went McDaniels, at least obviously because perhaps things were starting to go haywire, but they went to more lengths to sort of like
prevent any sort of talk.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think the fact that Flores was joking with the Dolphins reporter sort of illustrates that, right? Like, you know, I mean, like, everyone knows what's going on here, and, like, he's not going to say anything because he's smart, but, you know, okay, it's kind of funny that they're following him around, whereas I don't think that would have, you know, I don't think that joke would have been made last year.
Yeah, and there were Cincinnati reporters around Zach Taylor a little bit, too, and that part of it's interesting just because there's different... That part of it's interesting just because, like, both teams are dealing with that, you know? Now, I think one thing that does help, one thing that should help at least, is that the head coach in both situations is on the same side of the ball as the guy who's leaving, right? Like, so Flores and Belichick, McVay and Taylor. If there were any like, and I'm not saying, I don't think either guy's gonna have an issue. Like, I don't think either guy's going to be an issue on Sunday because they took a head coaching job. And we could talk for an hour about how stupid it is that they can't just sign a contract. Like, I think they should be able to just sign a contract and appoint, like, an associate head coach and, like, let that guy run the show until, like, Jim Caldwell in Miami,
right?
Like, just let, like, just, you all right, bud?
He's not near the mic, so probably didn't pick
we don't
up
have
the
a cough
thing.
We don't have a cough button on this thing either, so. but why can't they, like, this is what I don't understand. Like, why can't they just let him sign a contract, right? And then just say, like, I appoint Jim Caldwell my associate head coach. And then Jim Caldwell runs everything until he gets done.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the staffing is the one main distraction, right? You're trying to put together a coaching staff while others who are already hired are doing the same. And it's sort of a, you know, you need to try to get those things finalized. So there are conversations that have to be had right now. But I think, you know, coaches are good at compartmentalizing. You know, I remember Nick Saban when he was with the Browns with Belichick and he was hired to Michigan State. You know, he set aside a certain window every night that he would do that kind of stuff. And that's a bigger even thing, you know, that you're recruiting there. And, you know, so I think, you know, coaches know how to split up their time.
Yeah, and I remember Bill O'Brien when he was going to Penn State. Like, this was 2011 and they were in the Super Bowl, the game they lost to the Giants. And Bill O'Brien, basically, Belichick assigned George Godsey to him. And then those two like had an allotted amount of time where they could go and do Penn State stuff, whether it was recruiting, looking at recruits' tapes, like whatever it was. Like there was a period of time, and that's more difficult too. Like I think if you were going to a college job, it's more difficult because you're worried about like national signing day and all that different stuff. I have a hard time seeing where this is going to be any factor at all on Sunday. Just again, I don't think neither guy seemed distracted to me. They both understand what's going on, but even if they were, like you've got. They're backstopped by, Flores is backstopped on his side of the ball by maybe the best defensive coach of all time, right, in Belichick. And then Zach Taylor is backstopped by maybe, like a guy who at least right now looks like he's a generational offensive coach.
I think the one nice thing about this, though, and we did have this last year as well, but the fact that two coordinators from Super Bowl teams are being hired, because it just shows at least some... I don't know, some ounce of patience in the process, you know, because in the past it was like a lot of these guys wouldn't be hired because teams had such an itch just to get, you know, and get people in the building.
Like,
you know?
I always thought, like, if this is like, this is supposed to be a 10-year, 15-year decision, right? Like, ideally. Like, and it all, usually doesn't work out that way, but when you make the hire, that's the idea, right? Like, is that you're making a 10-year, 15-year decision. 19-year decision for your franchise. So what is 3 weeks? Right, like if this is like that sort of decision for your program for your organization, like why is 3 or 4 weeks? Why does that matter? So long as you can put together a good staff, and I think if the guy can't put together a good staff anyway, that's probably a red flag to begin with. Like so long as the staffing's not an issue, I think you're like I don't know why that'd be a problem.
And in Flores' case, you know, I wrote earlier this week, he's dealing with not only that. I mean, he is a guy that knows how to put things in compartments and knows how to focus. Yeah, you know, his mom is struggling. She's in hospice care with the cancer battle. So you think about a guy like that who's able to, you know, spend time with his mom and check in on her and also be interviewing for head coaching jobs and coaching a team. So, you know, I think he's highly... You know, that's one example of just how highly skilled that these coaches are at compartmentalizing.
Sure, sure. Okay, our final news item of the week, number 5. The Rams and Patriots are built in two very different ways. Despite a flurry of criticism for their aggressive offseason moves, Los Angeles is in the Super Bowl with notoriously mercurial personalities like Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, and Ndamukong Suh. He wrote Ndamukong Such. That's on you, Connor. While the Patriots have... largely clung to a core of Belichick loyalists. I think there's a fair point to be made there that Connor makes there, which is it is sort of a contrast in styles in that the Patriots have invested in the middle of their roster and the Rams have invested in the top of their roster. And it's something we've seen. I mean, there's sort of like the Colts were that way. The Colts had were top heavy, you know, like their highest paid guys were, you know, their eight highest paid guys would have been like top of the league at their positions. The Patriots aren't built that way. And one thing that illustrates, I know we pointed this out on the original recording of the podcast. We're going to keep referencing that, the original recording of this podcast. If you took the top eight paid players in the game, six of them are Rams. And that's Michael Brockers, Andrew Whitworth, LaMarcus Joyner, Ndamukong Suh, Todd Gurley, and Brandon Cooks. And that's even though their quarterbacks on a rookie contract.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think it's sort of two different roster building strategies. The Rams had the roster building strategy of just accumulating a bunch of stars. Yeah. And the Patriots...
Almost like NBA-ish.
Almost NBA-ish. And the Patriots' strategy is always find guys that fit specific roles on the team, whether or not they're like a highly coveted person. I know that James White is going to fill this specific role on my team, even though he might not be a top 10 running back in the league. So, you know, it's completely contrasting styles.
So if you're a player, do you root for the Rams? Because... that model is a model where like high-end players get paid.
Do we feel like we were saying similar things about the Eagles last year?
So would this be more of an argument then that like the strike when the iron's hot, like approach of getting a rookie quarterback and then getting them in a position to compete quickly and then turning around and getting really aggressive is the way to go?
I think so. And I think what was interesting is, you know, after the game, especially after they beat the Saints, their CEO, Kevin Demoff, was saying, well, you know, it's not the aggressive moves, it's the little moves that we made, like re-signing our long snapper and, you know, getting like a backup left tackle and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I understand that they want to, you know, spread the credit around the roster. But at the same time, I think it speaks volumes about Les and Sean that, you can handle this. Yeah. I mean, you saddled a 32-year-old quarterback or a 32-year-old head coach with some of the most mercurial, as we noted in
right,
there,
mercurial. I like that word.
Players in the NFL. I mean, guys that other coaches with decades of experience couldn't coach.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think that that's an incredible...
it's impressive.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's something that I wouldn't run from in term. And I know that they... Every team wants to, in some way or another, appear as though they're the Patriots, right?
Right.
That this is a sustainable thing that we're doing. But, man, I mean, I think you have to live in the present. You know, I think Howie Roseman embraced that he's sort of this notorious wheeler dealer. And, you know, I think that that's something that Les Snead can put in his ball cap.
Yeah, and it is interesting, too, because the Patriots have been able to roll the dice on guys in the past, but they've always bought low on those guys. You know, like
Never a high, yeah.
It's always, they bought low on Randy Moss. They bought low on Corey Dillon. They bought low on Albert Haynesworth. They bought low on Chad Johnson. Like, the Rams are rolling the dice on guys who are making a lot of money, who are at the top of their, like, salary structure, you know? And that's different. And like you said, like, I think it speaks, A, to maybe the way the young guys in the team are, and B, the way that young guys in the team are, and B, the leadership of McVay. And I should say, I think it's actually 7 of the top 9, because I was looking at an old cap sheet and that didn't have Aaron Donald's new contract.
That's all right, 7. That's so good we re-recorded to make sure we had that factoid correct.
So I think I had it 6 of 8.
I think you did, too, so I'm glad that this was leading us to this moment.
So that makes it all worth it.
It makes it all worth it,
absolutely. All right, well, I apologize to you guys for my lack of technical ability that caused you to have to be here in this room at the Marriott Marquis in Atlanta. That is my fault, but I think we may have done better the second time around.
I think we were well-oiled machine second time around. We knew all the prompts.
What's, like, all right, so you mentioned you like the word mercurial.
Mm-hmm.
What's the root of that word? Like, mercury, does it mean mercury going up and down?
Yeah.
So does that mean, like, somebody's being prone to going up and down?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Gotcha. I think mercurial is a great word.
See, now I've learned something, too. So we've made it all worth it re-recording the podcast.
Just for you guys. Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys for your patience and for your technical help and thank you to Jenny. Special thanks. Special shout out to Jenny for getting Gary Grambling on the phone to finally fix this.
Hustling thanks, back here after the pool report. Yeah. Come on.
Podcast. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that too. Thanks, guys. All right, we're going to jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Every week, I put the call for questions out on Twitter. If I pick yours, you get a little heart emoji. I hit the like button on your tweet. And you get an answer here on the podcast. But first, I want to tell you guys about Robinhood. Then we'll jump into the six-pack. Robinhood's an investing app, okay? It allows you to buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, cryptos, all of that commission-free. While all other brokerages are charging you up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commissions fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there's no account minimum deposit to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 Most Popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right time to invest. I'm going to help you guys out here. This is where we interact with you. We interact with you on the six-pack. Well, I want to interact with you here and give you guys a little something, a little sweetener to go and check out Robinhood. Okay, if you go to Robinhood.com right now, you're gonna benefit from being a listener to the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We're going to give you a free stock, like an Apple stock, a Ford stock, a Sprint stock, to help you build your portfolio. All you got to do, you sign up at Breer. That's Breer, my last name, Breer.Robinhood.com, and they will take care of you. Okay, I explained the six-pack. We're going to jump right into it. Question number one. This is from Andrew Fisher. That's at Colts Fisher, regular listener. What is your opinion on the Patriots' two-decade triumph over the AFC East? Is it due to Miami, Buffalo, and New York's dysfunction? Or have the Patriots kept them pinned down for almost 20 years? I think you have the right element there, but you're not really putting it together. I think the Patriots have created the dysfunction, okay? What's it like to be one of those teams looking up Mount Everest? What's it like being one of those teams never being able to steal a division title at 9-7? What's it like being one of those teams feeling like no matter what you do, when you get to December, that wagon in Foxborough is going to be pulling away from everybody else. You know what ends up happening? You end up questioning everything in your organization. You may pull the plug a little faster than you would otherwise. And what happens then? Well, now you've got organizations who are turning over their coaching staffs, turning over their scouting staffs every 2 or 3 years. It destabilizes your organization. You don't have an identity. Now all of a sudden you're falling behind and you continue to look for answers. You continue to turn over rocks. How am I going to find a way to climb up Mount Everest? So instead of doing it methodically, doing it slowly the way some other teams do, you keep looking up that, hill, and they are so far above you that you almost feel like you constantly need to change. And so I think that that's the answer to your question. They destabilize everybody else. Question number two, this is from Brett Frederick. Can the Browns win a Super Bowl if Jimmy Haslam doesn't change? Brett Frederick is at Brett_Frederick. No, if they are the way that they have been over the last 7 years, no, they cannot win that way. Because I think the way that that organization has been run has been a problem for everyone. And I just tell you that it stems from, I think, what Jimmy thinks he's doing to help, which really doesn't help. And that is being the guy who goes to the assistant line coach, who goes to the defensive backs coach and asks what's wrong and then goes to the head coach with that. The guy who goes to the area scout and asks what's wrong and goes to the general manager with that. And he thinks he's helping. And maybe it works that way in other businesses. But in the NFL, that's a problem. That empowers people to believe that they've got a voice with ownership. That empowers people to believe that, you know, maybe they can pass the buck if they need to. That empowers people to believe that they can maybe affect the way that they're being seen in the owner's eyes. Seth Wickersham from ESPN did a good job of sort of illustrating all of this. The good news here is I do think Jimmy has changed a little bit. I do think that Jimmy has empowered John Dorsey. I do think that Jimmy has empowered or is going to empower Freddie Kitchens. If he's changed, then I think this is a different deal. And you've obviously got the quarterback now, which raises the stakes for everyone. If he hasn't, then I think you've got that same problem that's existed there forever that I think has caused the organization have to turn itself over every 2 or 3 years. Question number three from Michael Pollock. That's at P. Mike Pollock. Do you think if Foles and Goff are the Super Bowl winning QBs in back-to-back seasons, it loosens up the cult of quarterbacks and we see less mediocre quarterbacks getting massive contracts? Mike, teams have talked about this for a while. Teams have talked about the idea of churning quarterbacks, hey, let's just draft a quarterback every year and maybe we can find a way to have a cheap answer at the position on the roster every year, and that way, you know, we have 3 or 4 or 5 additional really good players on our team. And it sounds great on paper. It's something else if you're actually one of these teams. It'd be ballsy for any team to look at even having a good quarterback. Let's say like an Andy Dalton level quarterback, and it'd be very tough for that team to say, we have an answer here. We've been to the playoffs with this guy. This guy we can win with. So we're going to cut the cord and just, you know, wander back off into the wilderness. Like, we're going to just go looking again. It's such an important position. And that's why I think it's so hard for anyone to do it. So on paper, I understand what you're saying. I have a hard time seeing where that would really work. And you know what? Just because you guys have been so patient and waiting for the podcast this week, I'm going to help you out one more time. I'm going to tell you guys about Hair Club. Now, I haven't had hair issues, but so many of my friends have. And your confidence is important. Sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of the Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. They understand the emotions you're feeling and know the questions you have. Hair Club is the leader in total hair solutions with a legacy of success for over 40 years. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair or to learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. See for yourself just how powerful great hair can be. And I'm telling you guys, my friends who have done this sort of thing, it's made all the difference in the world for them. It really has. You know, some of my friends go bald, they shave their head. I that's a personal choice. I feel like the guys who've actually gone through these sorts of treatments have really, really benefited from it from a lifestyle perspective. And so I want to try to give you guys a chance to get involved. If you go to hairclub.com/Breer, you'll get a free hair analysis and a take-home hair care kit. All that's valued at over $300. I'm giving you it for free. That's hairclub.com/Breer for hair, free hair analysis and free hair care kit. One more time, hairclub.com/Breer. Experience your hair and your life at its best only with Hair Club. I'm certain you'll love the club. Okay, question number 4 for the week. This is from Foobs at Andrew Faubert. Foubert, where do you believe is Le'Veon Bell's landing spot and why? I do not believe he's going to the Niners. I do not believe he's going to the Colts. I do not believe there's a consensus in the Jets organization that they should go after him. Maybe they will, but I don't think that there's a strong feeling for him there. The Bucs are the ones that have always made the most sense to me. I feel like you hire that coach, Bruce Arians, at his age. You look at the talent they've been building. Jason Light's been building there for 5 years now. They feel like they're on the cusp. Like, they're pretty close. Like, they're ready to compete. And they're in a tough division. And so I think they're right there. They're that type of team that, like, really, if you add one piece, it could put them over the top. Mike Evans is there. DeSean Jackson, we'll see if he's back or not. But they've got a good young receiver in Chris Godwin behind him. O.J. Howard at tight end. A good young offensive line. Jameis Winston, they've got some pieces on defense now. I look at Tampa, and Tampa makes the most sense to me. Question number 5, this is from Janet Krupp. I keep hearing about the matchup, Pat's offense versus Rams defense. What about Rams offense versus Pat's defense? I love this matchup because I think there's so many things that you're going to be able to visibly see here. What do the Patriots do from a matchup perspective? I don't think the Rams even know that. Who does Stephon Gilmore go on? Who is Patrick Chung on? Like, how do they handle that stuff, right? And those matchups are going to be so important in this one. And then for the Rams offense, you know that the Patriots are going to have a plan for Todd Gurley in the running game. You know the Patriots are going to have a plan for Brandon Cooks. Is it Gerald Everett? Is it Tyler Higbee? And then you think about the game within the game stuff, all right? Like, how about the play clock thing with Sean McVay helping Jared Goff out until the play clock, until the cutoff at 15 seconds, right? Like, being in his ear until 15 seconds. Well, you would think that the Patriots may send in 2 play calls, right? Like, one for pre-15 seconds and then switch at the 15-second mark. That might make some sense. Well, the Rams could come out. They could muddle huddle. They could get everybody to the line quickly and get a look at the defense and then snap the ball before the 15-second cutoff. There's just so many little things like that that fascinate me here. Again, I think the key for the Rams is going to be able to go to their secondary weapons, that second layer of weapons, okay? The Patriots generally won't let your big dogs eat. They'll generally be able to take the guys that you've relied on away. Todd Gurley, Brandon Cooks. So is Robert Woods the forgotten man, or do they have a plan for Robert Woods? Can Gerald Everett make some plays? Can Josh Reynolds make some plays? Can Tyler Higbee make some plays? That's the fascinating part of this particular matchup to me. And finally, question number 6 from Ken Boulin. That's at Magic Power 7. Do you think AB is trying to go the way of NBA stars by manipulating the situation in Pittsburgh to get a trade or be traded where he wants to go? I think AB is in a very, if he remains on the contract as presently constituted, there's $39 million left over 3 years. That is a very affordable number for a player of his caliber. It's less than Allen Robinson's making in Chicago. It's far less than what Sammy Watkins is making in Kansas City. That contract is attractive. And so, on paper, Pittsburgh could trade him to almost anywhere. How does he leverage this situation? Well, he leverages the situation by saying, I want a new contract. If you're going to trade me, I want some guaranteed money. And so, AB can certainly manipulate this if he wants to by making contract demands. He certainly could manipulate the situation by saying, I'm not showing up if I go to team X, Y, or Z. Now, obviously, the caveat here is that you have to be willing to go through with it. And so, is he willing to walk away from some money? That's a fair question, but I certainly think that there's a way that he could use leverage the same way NBA players use leverage. I appreciate you guys coming out. I appreciate you guys sticking with us. I appreciate you guys listening to us on a Friday morning. We had so many technical difficulties this week, but if you're listening to this right now, that means you are loyal as hell to us, and we appreciate it. As always, I hope you've been listening to all of our podcasts this week too, even the ones that haven't had the technical issues that we had. That's the podcast with Andy and Gary that they do twice a week. It's the gambling podcast. I'm going to give a shout out to the Most Valuable Podcast. Jess and Charlotte have been fantastic to us this week, lending us the equipment to do this twice. And, of course, always listen to our podcast. All the NFL podcasts are on one feed, the MMQB NFL podcast feed. And you can get that on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week is usually what I say, but it'll be a different time next week because of all the technical difficulties. So different time next week, probably on Wednesday morning. We'll see you guys then.